Next case for argument this morning is Goros v. Cook County. Mr. Mamel.
As large as we could get it, Your Honor. Your Honor, thank you, Judge. Christopher Mamel on behalf of the plaintiffs below, all of whom are Cook County Sheriff's police officers. We're here, Your Honor, after a summary judgment in the trial court determining that it was appropriate, and it is appropriate, for the sheriff's office to essentially remove years of service from the sheriff's police officers who are promoted to that position.
Mel, I don't understand what this case is doing in federal court.
Your Honor, we have 1983 claims in the case.
I understand you have invoked 1983, but what kind of hearing do you want? Right, the argument X is a property interest under state law is followed by, and therefore we need the following hearings under federal law. That's the only role defining a property interest plays. But your complaint does not ask for a hearing. I mean, what you're asking for is a substantive interpretation. Now, the Supreme Court held in Atkins against Parker, following up on Bimetallic Investment Company, that there is no right to a hearing on the interpretation of some state law or practice. So as a due process claim, this lawsuit is utterly frivolous. Is there any other federal claim here?
Your Honor, the 1983 claims are the only basis that we have asserted in this case for a federal jurisdiction.
Back to my point, right? Your belief appears to be, oddly, shared by the defendant, shared by the district court, that the federal constitution entitles you to enforce state law in federal court. And there are an awful lot of cases holding that it does not. There's no constitutional right to have state law applied correctly. That's just a question of state law. The only conceivable federal right is to have person-specific hearings before property rights can be taken away. And under the Atkins and Bimetallic Doctrine, there's no right to person-specific hearings here. So my question is, what's left?
Your Honor, there has been no process whatever that the sheriff's office has employed to take
any process for interpreting a law.
Your Honor, I think
that's the holding of Atkins.
Factually, though, what we are looking at is how the sheriff's office can determine length of service and years of service.
That has to do with the substantive meaning of state and local law. But there is no constitutional right to have state and local law understood and applied correctly.
Your Honor, I think that what we are asking is that there be a hearing in order to determine
hearing on what issue?
It would be the factual issues, Your Honor, of whether length of service is still applicable to the sheriff's police officers upon promotion.
Meaning of state and local law.
We have an interest, Your Honor, that these officers have in the rights that are granted them under this ordinance to always have the length of service continue to count as they progress through these steps.
But now you're back to the argument that the federal constitution insists that states apply their law correctly. And there are more Supreme Court decisions than you can shake a stick at holding that there's no such entitlement.
Your Honor, if there is no process to have a hearing here to determine these factual issues,
there is
no remedy for these officers under any circumstances, and they have simply then lost this clear property interest
from
the ordinance.
You can file a claim in state court.
In state court. That's where state and local laws are enforced.
To vindicate your client's rights under the pre-existing ordinance and then litigate the claim of whether it's been repealed, either expressly or by implication.
Clearly, we are here under 1983, and that's our only basis of jurisdiction. We asked below, and the court didn't decide on any of the bases that this panel is discussing with me today why we are not entitled to the hearing that we've requested. And consequently, we simply have the trial court having gone through these ordinances and misapplied them to not even give effect to the exemptions. The other hearing would be whether these officers are in an exempt category, again, as a matter of fact.
I just want to ask you about this collective bargaining agreement, because another argument you make is that the claim is not subject to the collective bargaining agreement because its grievance procedures do not cover the promotion of employees. But isn't the officer's concern with salary advancement after the promotion occurs?
Your Honor, the harm to these officers occurs at the time of promotion, because while the ordinance is applied correctly to put them into a new compensation category, immediately at that time they lose all of their length of service, and the collective bargaining agreement doesn't address even the definition or any of those terms.
Well, why doesn't the officer's claim involve an interpretation of the language in Article 5 of the collective bargaining agreement regarding rates of pay?
Your Honor, I don't think that it is an interpretation of that agreement, because it's not rates of pay. The rates of pay are not controversial. They are simply mechanically applied by the Department of Human or the Bureau of Human Resources here and set out in that chart. And then all the collective bargaining agreement does is negotiate a 3% increase annually. The rates are not the issue that they have. It is the the meaning of length of service and prior years of service that they are concerned with, and those are not addressed in the collective bargaining agreement, and they're not negotiated. They're not a subject of bargaining. So the Article 5 argument on the collective bargaining agreement doesn't it simply doesn't address the issues at all, and the bargaining agreement doesn't address those issues, so there would be no remedy and consequently no interpretation or preemption that would be available under that. Your Honor, to the extent that this Court will still consider any of the reasoning of the Court below, the issue there that the court we believe misunderstood is whether this is a matter of classification under the newer ordinance that was enacted in 2000, or whether it's a matter of career service. The Court didn't understand why the career service exception might be significant here, and that's indicated in the Court's footnote 3 at page 7 of the opinion. But the career service is the fundamental issue here. That's all that is at issue here. Classification is never an issue, and consequently the new statute exempts these officers directly. They still fall under the old statute. Your Honor, unless the Court has other questions, those are the fundamental issues I wanted to establish here. We have an operation that the Sheriff's Office undertakes that applies only to one category of its employees, and they all have to be promoted from within. It doesn't happen to any other of the two departments that are in there. It's simply a departure that's made based on a verbal direction the Sheriff made a number of years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Halston. There's a switch there, and you can lower the podium.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to start off by addressing your question about the collective bargaining agreement. The plaintiff's counsel, or the appellant's counsel, uses the phrase, remove, their years of service are immediately removed upon their promotion to the Sheriff's Police Department, as a way of trying to pull this issue out of the collective bargaining, out of the ability to grieve the process. And I want to say that remove their years of service is a misnomer. It's not as if the time that they worked has disappeared. It's just that the Sheriff's Police Department progresses the employees along the salary schedule in the collective bargaining agreement in a manner as laid out in the collective bargaining agreement. And that manner is both written in the collective bargaining agreement and has been an opportunity and subject to be collectively bargained for. At a prior time, the union and the Sheriff's Police Department and the county had agreed to bring that topic up as a point of negotiating in the next collective bargaining agreement. However, the Sheriff's Police officers themselves decertified their union prior to that contract being negotiated. So, Your Honor, the issue is clearly within the purview of the collective bargaining agreement, and there is a remedy for the Sheriff's Police officers. this court didn't spend much time talking about the validity of the old ordinance or the new ordinance and whether or not...
One reason is that whether Ordinance 0008, repealed Ordinance 5-325 and the like, is a question of local law, just totally unrelated to federal law. Did you ask Judge Kendall to dismiss this on the ground that it has no bearing whatsoever on federal law?
No. That was an issue missed by, as you point out, by the defendants as well in this case. However, I would like to point out that the personnel rule...
It's a pretty important principle that when diversity of citizenship is not present, which it certainly isn't, the federal courts are not open to resolve questions under state and local law, and that's all this is. This would be a diversity case if there were diversity, but there isn't.
I'd like to agree with that now at this time.
I think you should.
And then I would like to point out, lastly, that the personnel rules as they currently are drafted do not mandate that the officers be progressed in the manner in which they desire. There's nothing in the personnel rules that expressly states they should be progressed along with their years of service, and there's nothing, and the collective bargaining agreement expressly states that they should be moved otherwise. If there are no further questions, I ask that you affirm the decision of the lower court.
Thank you, Mr. Halston. Anything further, Mr. Mammel? All right. Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.